The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
All right, folks, welcome back to the UAB Director's Chair. He's the athletic director for your UAB Blazers, Mark Ingram. I'm Tony Curry. Of course, show airs at least 5 days a week right here on TKR, where we get your favorite podcasts. We're available all over the place. Mark, I have not talked to you in, has it been 3 weeks, 4 weeks? What's been
like
going on?
A year, Tony.
We were talking before. It's summertime. It's a transient time. People are on vacation. It's hard to get in touch with people. I certainly understand that. Kids are out of school, blah, 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 blah. But I hope you're having a great summer. What you been up to?
Yeah, I had a great summer so far. You know, our coaches have had camps. They've been recruiting in the month of May, and they've had camps in the month of June, which basically kind of wrap up at the end of this week. And then there's this window about 3 weeks where we feel like we can take a vacation. And that's when you'll see a lot of people gone from around here. Not everybody, but that's the moment that everybody takes vacation, sort of around the 4th of July holiday and the next week or two. And then, you know, by about the mid, you know, kind of 15th, 21st of July, these student athletes start coming right back. The ones that aren't already here staying through the summer, because our two soccer teams and our volleyball team, they start playing in early August, games. And of course, football reports officially reports, even though they're all here, but they officially report right there around the last 2 days of July, and then they start their fall camp. So it's amazing to think how close we are to playing games again, but it's right around the corner.
Yeah, this Saturday, I believe, 8 weeks. I think it's 8 weeks, 56 days, something like that, till college football.
I mean, it's close. And for us, we play 2 days before that, so even less.
Yeah, I'm so glad to have you on today for a lot of reasons. First of all, if you listen to the show, the UAB Director's Chair, I love having athletic directors on. You're the only athletic director I have on. But I can get coaches on. We can do X's and O's, and that's great. And certainly, I know people would love to hear Trent Dilfer on this radio program, and you have. But I love to have you on because I feel like you could pull the curtain back on what's going on in college sports right now. And a lot has happened over the last 3 weeks, particularly with this House versus NCAA gig. And it appears now that everything's been signed, sealed, and delivered. We're going to have some roster size limits, no scholarship limits. Could you basically, and if you've listened to our previous shows, you've gotten it point blank exactly what's going to change and how it's going to look or feel or smell different this college football season. But could you please kind of go over some of the big points and how it directly affects UAB now that this thing's put to bed?
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, the start of it was a settlement that included back pay for 10 years to student athletes and only in the Power Four conferences, but it's paid out by every single NCAA institution.
Well, but back up real quick. Was there a reason, who came up with that 10-year thing? I know you don't have the answer to all these things, but was there a reason why it was 10 years, not 15 years, 5 years, why it was retroactive? What was the situation there?
Well, I don't know the actual answer, but it was just that was the number they settled on.
Okay. You know, you can't go back. Was there a case 10 years ago that was a great starting point? Was there something related to the House versus NCAA that had to involve a case 10 years ago, perhaps?
It was longer ago, and it's what everybody, if you remember Ed O'Bannon, the basketball player from UCLA, that has for years been referred to as the O'Bannon case, where, you know, he sued because of this. He was just like, you know, UCLA's made all this money from me and from my name and my image, my likeness, and I've gotten nothing out of it. And so that was a bit of the first pry bar in there to try to loosen this thing up. But so yes, but I don't think that 10 years necessarily marks a particular date as much as just this recognition and agreement that you can't go back to every single living former student athlete. So they chose, okay, so look, we will settle on 10 years. And it pays each of those student athletes has to sign up to receive a payment. So they've been notified through the mail and through email and all other forms.
Is this every student athlete?
Every football, men's basketball, women's basketball player from the Power Four conferences only. So the joke of that is you take, just looking at our teams, some of the great players that we've had, Jordan Walker was the player of the year. Yaxel Lindeborg was the defensive player of the year twice. These guys, they won't get a penny because they were at UAB and not there. Now, a guy like Trey Jemison, for example, who played at UAB, started his career at Clemson. Trey will probably get a little money. From this, Eric Gaines, who started his career at LSU, will get a little bit of money. How much money, you know, how they're breaking that out, I don't know. And it's, you know, think of it like a unit, like a year would be a unit. They'll get some units for that. But otherwise, the G5 players are not going to get any payment. But we, UAB, have to participate in funding those payments. So even though our kids aren't going to get them directly, and that's the unfair part of it, is that we have to participate. So it's going to cost us $417,000 a year for the next 10 years. And the year we're in that we're closing out is year one. So we had to prepare in our budget for that.
So roughly a little over $4 million you'll be paying out over the next 10 years.
Yeah.
What do the Power Four schools have to pay?
Yeah, that's different conference to conference, and it's a seven-figure number. They've never disclosed what that number is, and yeah, it's a bigger number, but they also preemptively took all the money from the new multi-team, 12-team, now going to 14-team playoff from the college football, from the CFP. So they took that money to offset this. Mm-hmm. But then we all had to participate. So that's a bit of a negative. So 10 years of that. But now starting July 1st and in perpetuity, it seems like we will now do what's called revenue sharing with our own student athletes. We are allowed to spend up to $20.5 million on paying players in any sport we wish. Primarily football, men's and women's basketball is what everybody will be doing, but that will slowly cascade out to every sport. And this is at every school. It's important to hear that term revenue sharing. It's not profit sharing, because there are probably less than 15, maybe even less than 10 schools in the country who make a profit mm-hmm. without help from their university, without any help from the university. Like even the ones who advertise that they don't get help, they do. They get what's called indirect support. So let's say indirect support could be things like there's an on-campus facilities entity that pays their utilities, or they have lawn maintenance that like groundskeepers that mow the grass, maintain the flower beds. Maybe the biggest schools have their own grounds crew for their athletic fields. Yeah. But what about just the grass out in front of the building? Mm-hmm. Who mows that?
Yeah.
And there might be a central unit that mows that. So there are even the places that say they don't get anything usually get something. Might be small, but something. And so why do I bring that up? Well, you're doing revenue sharing. That means the only way to share any revenue is to take away from something you're already doing. So you eliminate this to take the cash, this service to take the cash to then give it to the players over here. You're just robbing Peter to pay Paul. And yep. It's not just UAB. You know, I guess to not use school names, one of the largest budgeted schools in the country told eight of their head coaches almost a year ago, about 8-9 months ago, to stop offering scholarships in their sport so that they could take those dollars. And like, if you were on one of those teams, Tony, what their plan is they're going to let you finish out on your scholarship until you graduate, but they're not adding new freshmen. They're bringing them in, but not on scholarship. So they can take the money and give it to the football, men's, and women's basketball players. And that's not enough to cover it. That's just one of the things they're doing to try to offset those payments, to create money for those payments.
So if I'm bringing a kid in and he's not getting a scholarship, then he has to pay his own way? I mean, he's going to do that through the revenue sharing.
No, he's not going to do it through revenue sharing. Let's just pretend that sport was, I don't know, men's tennis.
Yeah.
If one of those was, that means that everybody in the future, they will fund the tennis program at the same level, meaning paying the coach and the travel and gear and equipment and the facility, they're going to keep doing that, but they're not going to pay for scholarships. That means every player is basically a walk-on. And you think, well, why would they do that? Because the kids want to play. Yeah. They want to play, and they want to play at the highest level they can possibly play at. And they'll be willing to do it.
I was going to say, am I to assume that the cost of them having to pay for their education based on the money they're receiving now under this new agreement will roughly be the same as getting a free education like we always thought it was?
No. That's the point, is that those sports that lost those scholarships, they're not providing any access to education anymore. They're running that like a high level club team.
Wow.
And they've decided they're going to do that. So then another school was down here in Hoover for the Southeastern Conference baseball tournament. Mm-hmm. And I had a chance to talk to one of their senior administrators at one of the schools who said that their AD had put, and they're one of the biggest budgets in the league, that their athletic director had said to every coach and every unit head, and a unit in athletics would be like the marketing department, your compliance office, you know, fundraising unit, these units that you have facilities, that the AD had said to every coach and every unit leader, I need to see what your department and operation would look like if you cut your budget by 15%, 20%, and 25% to try to offset, to take those dollars to then pay players. So that all this to be said, Tony, that we're not alone in this being a challenge. Everybody's, yes, trying to raise more money, but we've always been trying to raise more money. There's never been this pocket of people that we just chose not to go try to ask for. We've been asking, trying to sell tickets forever. Mm-hmm. So you can't just say, well, you got to generate new revenue. Yeah, you do, but for 20 million? You're going to have to stop doing some things that you used to do.
Yeah. Mark Ingram, UAB athletic director. This is called the UAB director's chair. We do it 5 days a week right here on Tony Curry Radio, TKR. Get the TKR app like 100,000 folks have done. Also get us on your favorite podcast. We're in the top 10% of all podcasts in the country and pride ourselves on it. It's because we have great content. We talk real deal stuff here. First question, and I got a million questions here. Any casualties? Have you heard of any casualties as far as in school saying, listen, we just can't do this? I mean, it appears like everyone's on board, or are they?
Well, there over the last year, I think there's 32 sports that have been eliminated nationwide in anticipation of this, okay, of this challenge. And so that will continue to happen, unfortunately.
Yeah. The next question is, are there any other legal ramifications to be drawn up, or can anyone still sue? I know prior to the pen being put to the paper and the dotting of the T's and the I's and the blah, 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 they were told that there were no more lawsuits. This was going to clean up everything. Is there anything else out there that needs to be cleaned up, or is this it?
Nothing, you know, you can't speak in infinite terms ever. Everything, always, sure, never.
Yeah.
Let me just say now I'm going to do it. There will always be some lawsuit, but it doesn't mean they'll win it. Doesn't mean that they'll be able to have to be forced to settle it. What it means is, you know, you can file a lawsuit for anything. So that's always going to continue to happen. One of the big objections is just that it's eliminating all these opportunities. But, you know, no school is required to provide a track team or a soccer team or a football team or whatever. The institutions aren't required to do that. The NCAA requires you to have 16 sports to be a Division I program. And then separate of that, the Office of Civil Rights, which is where the Title IX laws come from, not the NCAA, then they expect us to follow certain guidelines around participation to be balanced with male and female participation. So you can't just have, you know, all men's teams because they seem to draw a bigger crowd. You have to have a certain number of female participants relative to the number of female students that is the same percentage of female students that you have on campus. So it's not 50-50. It's really relative to if you have 60% female students, then your athletic opportunities also need to be 60% female.
Gotcha. I want to go back to that 20.5.
Things around that. That's right, yeah. Tony. Things around that I think will continue to be thrown up related to these payments.
Yeah. I want to go back to this $20.5 million number you threw out. Again, is that the number... Is that what teams or what universities are allowed to spend? Is that what they have to spend? How do we alleviate the opportunity for an Alabama and Auburn to be paying $120 million to their football players as opposed to 20?
That is the cap number that you are permitted to spend.
So you cannot spend more than $20 million in your entire athletic department.
Yeah, and it escalates like every second or third year by 3% or 5%.
Now, who's overseeing that?
Well,
we blew past that number several times last year.
Yeah, that was part of the lawsuit settlement with this judge in California, Claudia Wilkin. That was the decision, and so the lawsuit was between. It's called the House settlement. It was a swimmer named Grant House. And it's a lot, which is confusing. People think House like Congress. No, that's the guy's name. Ironically, the money's going to football, men's, women's basketball players. He was a swimmer. So he agrees in theory with the situation, but he's not doing anything to benefit swimming. In fact, I'd say it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt swimming, particularly men's swimming, but nonetheless, that's part of the settlement is determining a number. Okay. Now you still can, Tony, separate from the payments that we can make. No, we're not required to do any of it. But we won't be able to do 20 and a half million by any means, but nor would anybody else in our league, but we're all going to do as much as we can do. And that will be the competitive difference probably. You can still do authentic deals, call it NIL deals with businesses. So one of our players could go out and get a restaurant to do a legitimate endorsement deal. But the NCAA hired Deloitte to oversee this and be this clearinghouse. So
who's Deloitte?
It's an accounting firm. It's a high level accounting firm, national.
So you can still have a quarterback making $6-7 million a year because he could be making the money off the side outside the revenue sharing he's actually getting through his university.
Well, yes and no. Every deal that's over $600 has to be submitted to Deloitte for their review. And their review would be, do you as the player actually have that value, legitimately have that value? And none of them do. I mean, the Heisman Trophy winner doesn't have.
Okay, so if they don't, what happens? If they say, if you get some rich auto guy comes in and goes, listen, I really want my son to play quarterback, blah blah blah, and I'm going to give him $2 million, but he's not worth $2 million, then what do they do?
Yeah, I think that's the big question on everybody's mind right now, Tony. Is what does the enforcement really look like? I will say to Deloitte's credit, they've been able to, I think, you know, as the NCAA gets beat up by a lot of things and sometimes very well deserved, they acknowledge as a staff that they're just really bureaucratic, committee heavy, takes forever to get an answer on anything. But that was all designed that way by people like us. I mean, we are the committee members. But they acknowledge that and they know that. And so what their point here was, let's give this issue to this high level accounting firm. They will do these valuations on these players and they'll turn them around quickly. What we don't know yet is what's the enforcement. I mean, the thought is if you're doing these deals impermissibly, you become ineligible. And Deloitte would just say, look, you're ineligible. That hasn't happened yet, but they have rejected deals. They have had kids say, hey, I've got this $1,000 deal. And they go, hey, man, you're brand new to campus. Nobody knows who you are. You haven't played yet. We're rejecting that deal. You don't have that kind of value.
And is that a subjective situation? I mean, obviously, how's Deloitte know what a guy, whether he's a 4-star, 5-star, 3-star, whether he's going to be a great quarterback? How do we not know he's not worth $1,000?
Well, because it's not about are they worth it as a player. It's are they worth it in the marketplace from a marketing perspective. So, again, you're the number one safety in the country. We've signed Tony Curry out of Dallas, Texas. He's coming to our school, and that's all great. And you may be a first-round draft pick 3-4 years from now. But if we just put your face on a billboard, would the common passerby know who you are? And the answer is no. They would not know who you are. Now, the totally geeked out recruiting person, they might, but that's a small population of people. So if I put the car dealership logo next to your face, do people automatically go, oh my gosh, that's that great safety, Tony Curry. He endorses this dealership. No, they do not do that. And so there is an algorithm that they're using. It's not subjective. They've got this algorithm based on, you know, playing time, and it's what the NFL and businesses use to determine the value of NFL and Major League Baseball for other pro athletes. It's the same system that they use now to determine what one's value is. Now, if they come back and say, hey, your value is worth $1,000, and the player goes, well, my value may be $1,000, but I'm only doing it for $10. Then the dealership has to decide, are they willing to pay more for it or not? Yes, but there's a minimum number that their actual name, image, and likeness has a value. And the truth is, man, these college kids don't really have it, particularly now that they start bouncing around. I was at this school and did really well, and this community knows me, but now I transferred over there. They don't know me at all. They just sort of know of me. They've gotten this player who's supposed to be good. We'll see.
That's something we have not even discussed, and I've got so many questions because you're answering these questions. You're doing so well, but it's such a big issue. Roster sizes, before we get into transfers, sizes, they've been cut to what, 105? Why is that, and how does that affect
football,
you?
Yeah, in football, it's 105. I think the initial, it's funny, that your question is a good one, and I'm not sure everybody really knows why these two things were joined together, roster limitations, new roster limitations. Compared to, you know, as part of the House settlement, I think that the original thinking was, hey, if we shrink the rosters a little bit, that's going to provide a cost savings to these departments to help alleviate some stress and free up funding. Well, in the sport of football, Division I football, you have 85 scholarships. Most of us were hovering around 120 players. So you got 35 walk-ons. Well, to drop down to 105 just means you're losing 15 walk-ons. Well, they're paying their own way anyhow.
Yeah.
So the savings, financial savings, is if we ever had a team meal that included everybody, the gear that those 15 kids wore, we don't have to buy cleats and helmets and shoulder pads, et cetera, for them, for their gear. But they probably weren't dressing out on game day anyway. So they didn't have a uniform, you know, a game day uniform, which is separate and very expensive. They weren't traveling, you know. Now the real value, so there's some financial value, but not much. Probably the greatest value is that, and it's not just football, baseball is now 34, women's soccer and baseball used to be 40 to 45. So there's a few, women's soccer is like 27 or 28, and they used to be like 32 or five. Mm-hmm. So there's some smaller numbers across the board. Where the value hits us is if we, for example, if we felt like we needed one or two more trainers. Well, now for the total population of student athletes that we had, well, now we've shrunk that population, so we don't need as many trainers as we once needed. Yeah. So maybe we don't need to add a trainer. So it's not a savings, but I'm not as desperately behind there. Academic staff, you know, it's that much more laundry that the equipment guys don't have to do every day. It's that many more strength workouts that the strength coaches don't have to write and monitor and train every day. So it allows us, from a student athlete welfare standpoint, for those that are still with us, it allows them to receive more attention, and that's a positive thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's that many ankles that don't get taped every day by the trainers and rehab, and that they're not doing after practice. And that's a real thing.
Yeah.
But financially, There's not much of a
say. Not much. UAB Director's Chair. We do it every single week right here. We've been off the last few weeks because it's summertime and people are traveling, stuff like that. So happy to have Mark back on. He's the athletic director for the UAB Blazers, UABSports.com, if you want to go to their website and check it out. Love, hate transfers. Some people absolutely love them because you can go from here to here overnight. Certainly understand that. And next thing you know, you get guys with like 7, 8, 9, 10 years of eligibility. I don't know how you don't have to sit out anymore. Has any of that changed? And I guess the biggest question is, if you go to a school and you're getting paid and you decide to leave, do you have to pay that money back?
Yeah, you know, there was a point where there were some people saying we're not going to do we're not going to have buyout clauses with these athletes unless everybody's doing it. In fact, the AD from Penn State, Pat Kraft, who's a friend, he made a public statement. His actual statement was, we're not doing it unless Alabama does it. That's what he said.
Okay.
And I don't know if Alabama's doing it or not, but they're. In talking to other ADs, and I was at a national AD meeting a couple of weeks ago, it sounds like everybody or nearly everybody is going to do it. We're planning on doing it. If you have a multi-year agreement and the kid leaves, that's fine. They're free to do that. But there's some financial payback that they're going to have to deal with. And
will these kids be paid up front? Do they get paid semesterly? How does that work?
I think every school is going to be different. We're paying monthly.
Okay.
We're going to say, hey, Tony, you're going to make $20,000 and we're going to pay you whatever that is over this eight month period. We're going to pay you, you know, this much money a month for 8 months. And here's how much it is in each month. And I think football is different than basketball, whereas, you know, basketball plays games in both the fall and spring semesters, and football is just a fall semester sport. So any of the fall semester sports are different, and they have multiple transfer portal windows. At least today they do. So sometimes you might create an incentive like, hey, you're going to make $3,000 a month, but if you come back in January, we're giving you a bonus in January because you came back.
Yeah. And we briefly touched on the transfer thing, and I realize this is not part of
Hey, Tony, football is the only sport where, you know, you can play four games. You can play in any four games and still redshirt. But if you play a fifth game, you can't redshirt.
Yeah.
So we may have a situation where once you play in game five, and if agreed, you know, we all know you're not redshirting now, maybe your pay increases.
Yeah, I know the transfer policy and what it's turned into, and it's an ugly monster, is not part of this deal. But was there anything in the small print about the transfer? Is that going to remain? Is it going to stay the same as it is? Or is it going to be any type of tweaking now that we've got this lawsuit out of the way? Any kind of tweaking on that? Or is this the wild, wild west?
I'm hoping it's still Wild West. And what we did for a couple of years was we allowed kids to transfer once and play immediately. But if they did it a second time, they would have to sit out a year. Mm-hmm. If we could figure out a way to go back to that, that's what we need to do. You know, it's bad. I know that nobody's going to feel sorry for me or for the coaches because the coaches are so highly compensated, but it's really unfair to the coaches. They are measured strictly on performance. They go find Tony Curry that nobody else recruited. You redshirt. We're developing you. We believed in you. We saw something that others didn't see. We turn you into a good player, and then you leave. Well, then if the coach doesn't win games, if he does that enough and the coach doesn't win games, well, then the coach gets fired.
Yeah.
He's an idiot for hiring the coach. The coach gets fired when the coach really was doing a great job. But when they have to constantly bring in new players every year, you lose continuity, you lose leadership, you lose experience. You might pick up a guy who started at Furman, comes here, but he knew what Furman did. He knew what their system was. He didn't know our system. He knows how they and their staff like to do things. They don't know how we like to do things. And it's a million little things, Tony. It's how do we eat? How do we line up? How do we dress? How do we travel? How do we stretch? When it says 2 o'clock team meeting, what does that mean? Well, that means be there at 2 o'clock. No, what that means is have your pants on, be taped and ready, have your spikes on, and be there 5 minutes early. That's what 2 o'clock means. Not street clothes. at 2 o'clock. That means ready to go at 2, minus your helmet and shoulder pads.
You've done a fantastic job in answering all the questions, and we can go another hour, and we can do that next week. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. If you got any email questions, we'll read those. We'll talk some classic rock too in the next couple of weeks. Final question, NCAA, where does this leave the NCAA? Is it safe for now? I know there's talk about it, perhaps a commissioner that was going to overrun everything, but it sounds like the accounting firm is going to be the oversighter more than even the NCAA is at this point. But where does this leave the NCAA?
Well, two things. I think they wanted to have somebody else handle this particular area of oversight. And again, we don't have any idea what the repercussions is it ineligibility or whatever, but they wanted to give that to somebody else that could manage that more expeditiously than they do. I think when you look at the autonomy for conferences, there's been talk about this breakaway for years because, look, the fact that we have to call them that, the designation of Power Four, Autonomy Four, whatever you want to call it, the fact that there's a designation tells you there's a belief of a separation. Mm-hmm. There is already a separation. It may not be a hardline physical divide, but there's a divide. And my guess is the only reason they haven't left yet is because they're not sure who else should be in the club. Who else should be in the club with them? Should Washington State and Oregon State, that got left out of the Pac-12, should they be invited in? Should they be invited back into the club? What about Boise? They've demonstrated an ability to be good at football. I don't know about everything else, but you know, maybe what about the academies? Should Army, Navy, and Air Force, should they be in the club? They're America's teams.
Yeah.
I don't think that they've been able to come to an agreement on who should be in the club. No. And if they could come to that, they'd probably break away.
Great stuff, my man. Let's catch up next week. Let's talk some classic rock. Saw Def Leppard last night. It was great. I want to share some stories with you. My 20-year-old son finally saw a classic rock show. I'm almost feel embarrassed the fact that I did classic rock radio for 40 years, and my 20-year-old son, the man who came from my loins, has just seen his first classic rock band. But it was a good start for him. For a band that's been around for 50 years, hard to believe. It was fantastic. But I love you, and I hope you have a great week. We'll catch up next week, okay?
All right, pal. Thank you.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.